I'm going to talk to you today about how research, community engagement, and advocacy can create better policy and practice. And so to give you a profile of the community in which I live and work, it's northern Manhattan. It's an environmental justice community with a disparate burden of pollution. A very small area, 7.4 square miles, but very dense. Over 620,000 mostly African-American and Latino residents. Excess mortality from a range of disease. It's a non-attainment area for clean air standards and has a high risk of cancer from air toxics, according to the EPA. This is sort of an iconic photograph of a family playing on Riverside Drive opposite the North River Sewage Treatment Plant, which was the first campaign that really got my organization started on an 8-year organizing campaign to hold the city accountable for the emissions that were coming from that plant. By working with community residents to engage them in the decisions that affect their lives, we've worked with them to prioritize and identify 8 key issues that we believe are indicators of a healthy community. And at various times, we work on a variety of these issues and develop campaigns around them as well. Our theory of change combines community organizing with participatory research and evidence-based campaigns. To give you a sense of the variety of community academic partnerships that we have with a number of universities working on children's environmental health and air quality, looking at cumulative impacts of stress and air pollution, lead prevention, climate in children, and indoor toxins. But I'm going to focus this time on the 15-year partnership we've held with 2 research centers at Columbia. Primarily the Columbia Children's Environmental Health Center, which has a cohort study focused on prenatal exposures of African American and Latino women, pregnant women, living in the South Bronx and Harlem, and they're once born, their babies are monitored from birth through now 14 years of age as the oldest child. And we began to reach out to Columbia because we wanted to study the relationship between community-level environmental exposures and health outcomes. And again, to translate those findings into policy change that could make a difference in environmental decision-making that affects our community's lives. So we've worked and advanced policy in 4 key areas. Prevention of lead poisoning, air quality impacts on children, reducing chemicals in children's products, and linking insecticides to neural development. And I'll just talk about a couple of those. So our lead campaign began some years ago, and our goal was to shift the burden of identifying lead in an apartment from parents to a landlord. This was very important because about 80% of people in New York City live in apartments. So they are not controlling their home environment. So we began power mapping. Who could really have the power to make a difference on this issue? And so that was the city council. And there was a local law 1 on lead poisoning prevention, but it was not strong enough. So that was our target. We cultivated a legislative champion. So a Harlem City Council person, Bill Perkins, sponsored the amendment to Local Law 1. We had data from a center researcher, Joe Graziano, who has been a national expert on lead for many decades. There was a beginning coalition that it started called the New York City Coalition to End Lead Poisoning, and we joined that coalition. The problem with the coalition was that it was a bunch of professional advocates going down to elected officials' offices. And at one point, my Harlem councilman said, "Why is it that I only see people from other communities? I don't see Harlem families coming to me to talk about these issues." So we began to develop workshops, do outreach to tenants. We hosted the first citywide conference in New York City on lead poisoning prevention. And we began to develop advocacy and trainings for parents. We identified council districts with the highest lead prevalence and we recruited parents to testify and tell their personal stories to their policymakers. We trained parents in key districts to testify. We held demonstrations with key pediatricians, and we had a stroller brigade of parents as well. And when we do trainings with parents, we really want to equip them with skills and knowledge. How to identify the problem, how to solve the problems, how to collectively vision together as a community, how to develop responsibility and collective action. And so through a 6-week environmental health leadership training course, we take folks to the steps of awareness, making the information relevant to their homes and their lives, and then we develop campaigns for them to be involved in so that they can understand and apply those principles. So this is part of our stroller brigade. You might see pediatrician Dr. Phil Landrigan on the left of the large photo, a well-known pediatrician from Mount Sinai. And again, parents there all saying that they need to have stronger lead protection. This is a bus ad that we developed with a HUD grant on buses citywide in Spanish and in English. And again, it was very important to get those parents to talk to their electeds, and we were able, after 2 years, to pass one of the strongest lead poisoning laws in the country, a law that now means that a landlord has to do testing in an apartment if a child is under the age of 6. And then if lead peeling paint is found, he has to do that abatement. Again, shifting that burden to the landlord from the parent. Another key campaign has been around air quality and cutting the fine particulate exposure. Fine particulates are important because they exacerbate asthma, and the communities in which I live and work have some of the highest asthma rates in the country. And so with the research from the Columbia Children's Environmental Health Center that looks at the levels of PM2.5 exposure on pregnant moms, and then again looks at the impact on health outcomes over the life of the children, we had a lot of data on combustion sources, and that data linked that exposure to developmental delays, low birth weight, and small head circumference. So we looked at who, again, power mapping could make a difference. The governor could make a difference because the Metropolitan Transit Authority that runs the city bus system is under the governor's authority. It's a state authority. And why were buses important? Because Harlem houses over one-third of the city's bus fleet, one of the largest in the country. We began a coalition of organizing residents who live near these 5 or 6 bus depots and truck depots. We developed the training program and, again, recruited residents and parents into that program. We held city council hearings. We were very friendly with the transportation chair of the city council, and he held one of the first city council hearings outside of City Hall in Harlem on the MTA bus operations. And again, we were able to work with the Transit Workers Union as well. So again, we're able to pull in some strong allies. Again, direct action's always important where it's relevant. And so we developed protests at depots. One depot was closing downtown, one was opening uptown, and we kept up a protest every single week for 6 weeks, and then held press conferences with electeds. Unfortunately, that did not stop the new depot, but it did mean that over the period of the next 10 years, that the MTA has totally transformed its entire fleet to hybrids, compressed natural gas, and a diesel retrofit on every bus. In the meantime, we used some litigation. We filed a Title VI administrative complaint to the Department of Transportation, and we used media through bus shelter advertisements, GIS mapping, a variety of news stories, and videos of families living near these facilities at where we had breakfast briefings with City Council members. This is a map of showing where the heavy levels of PM2.5 are, and again, you see the darkest areas are throughout Manhattan, and again, we're at the tip of Manhattan. This on the left, if you live uptown, breathe at your own risk, was a campaign that we held, and we took best shelter ads in English and Spanish all over northern Manhattan. On the right, you'll see one of the largest bus depots, and you will see that it is adjacent to one of the largest public, middle-income housing developments in the city, over 1,800 units. And what you can't see is also on the bottom level is a junior high school. Again, here's a garbage truck depot in East Harlem, which does have the highest asthma rates in the country. And you will see sanitation trucks. When those sanitation trucks gear up at 5 a.m. in the morning, and these people in the summer have their windows open, you can imagine what that impact is like. And so we spent many years working with the families in these buildings, getting them air conditioning, and finally getting them relocated. Again, a press conference with transit workers, elected officials, and clergy. And I'm going to end by just talking about reducing chemicals in child products, because over the years, what we have been finding have been the impact of phthalates on children's environmental health, as well as flame retardants and BPA, which is a plasticizer in children's products. So the outcome of our translational work has been a 2010 ban on BPA in children's products, children under the age of 3 only. And in 2011, there was a bill banning flame retardants in children's products again. And we worked with a strong coalition called the Just Green Partnership, which is a statewide coalition. Many of those same people are part of a national coalition, Safer Chemicals, Healthy Families, working for reform of chemical policy called TSCA reform as well. But again, at the state level, our focus was state legislators. We found a champion, again, our Harlem State Senator. We developed tip sheets, workshops, had parents, again, visiting electeds. We had a stroller brigade to the state capitol. And one little story that came out of that was my deputy director told me that angry mothers really intimidated the elected officials. And one mom even presented an elected official with her breast milk in a bottle that was contaminated by BPA. And he was pretty shocked. So that was a fairly successful campaign. And this is some of our elected officials, and Frederica Pereira, who's at the microphone, who's head of the Children's Environmental Health Center. And on Earth Day, we are giving a grade to air quality, lead poisoning, pests and pesticides, and a variety of environmental issues. And again, those grades were from a survey of community residents, as well as looking at city data on how the city believes they're doing. And I know the Department of Health really pushed back when we said that the community only gave water quality a C, because everybody says New York City has the best water. But when you have rusty pipes in your building and the water's coming out brown, you may not believe that the water is that healthy. So again, we have to ground truth what the city believes is happening. So again, we believe that Working with residents to engage them makes a difference with elected officials. Having data for strong evidence-based campaigns makes a very, very big difference. Thank you.